So last year, Dan Kaminsky did a presentation here called Paquetto, which included all kinds of really cool, scary ways of making TCP do all kinds of things that it really wasn't designed to do in all kinds of interesting ways. So in the meantime, since last year, Dan has continued to be obsessed with screwing with TCP in any way he possibly can, and has so many cool new things that we're letting him speak again on other things to do to TCP. So here is Dan.
Hey, everyone. Is this working? All right. I can't actually see this screen. I'm assuming it's not on because I see this blue glare and it's... Yeah, let's try this. Do we have a winner?
Hold on. Yeah.
All right. Now, once again, you'll notice these are not slides. We are engineers. We don't need slides. However, anyone running Debian or anyone running Linux? Jesus, where am I? If you can, since I know you're all screwing around on the net during all these talks, because I was screwing around on the net during all these talks, go get UDPcast. Especially if you might happen to have mPlayer installed on your machine, because there's something I want to demonstrate to you guys. By the way, UDPcast is a code that came down from the gods, good enough that I was going to go write something that I'm like, I'll just stick with what that guy did. Alright, so, apparently I'm famous for doing really weird things to TCP/IP. Wonder why. So, November 2002, I came out with a package called the Paquetto Kairetsu, hit 1.0 around then. Paquetto is a collection of a number of very small but reasonably useful tools. In my mind, they were just proof of concepts. Then a bunch of people started using them. This had to do with the fact that particularly the port scanner was really, really fast. If you take Nmap and you ask Nmap, please scan these 65,000 hosts. Nmap will say, yeah, that's fine, that's cool, I'll get back to you in a day or two. And people were happy about that. Scanran in tests, you will throw it at 65,000 hosts, single port. It will send all the SYNs all at once. It will get replies back to you in about 4 seconds. 4 seconds for a 65,000 host scan. So I thought this was nice because, wow, now we can do a real-time audit. We don't need to worry about there being a delay in between when you start the audit and when the results happen. Like, you want to know what's on your network? You know now. Completely changes the name of the game in terms of awareness of what's on your network. So let's talk a little bit about how Scanrand works. It's really simple. I mean, we're talking simple to the point that the initial build of it was something like a couple hundred lines of libnet and libpcap. It is a split design. One half of it goes... Why is this thing making so much noise here? If I held it down here, can everyone hear? How about here? Alright, I'm trying to avoid this popping noise, so, sorry. Alright, so check it out. You have two halves to Scanrand. One half actually goes ahead and manages... Here's a set of hosts that I need to be sending data to. The other half goes ahead and says, well, I'm going to be getting a bunch of responses back. There will either be SYNACS, reflecting the fact that this port is indeed available on this host, or there'll be RESETACS, indicating that the host is indeed up, but the port is down. Now, the initial build just stopped there, and I just sent out SYNs as fast as my network can handle, and now I've got a bunch of replies. I'm done. Did that just turn off for you guys too? Damn, power management. Alright, that could have been enough, except I'm a paranoid bastard who last year talked about SSH, and if I did left it at that, what's the obvious attack? Oh! Here's some guy here, he's scanning everywhere, he doesn't care what replies come back to him. So I'm just gonna spoof to him 800,000 replies, maybe he'll throw it into his database, maybe it'll crash the database. Who knows? How do I know what people are going to do with my code? So, I didn't like that. I'm a crypto guy. I'm paranoid. I can do better. So, what I did was I went ahead, and let's look at TCP for a second. If I send a packet, what in what I send comes back to me in the reply? Well, obviously the IPs are going to come back, I'm from here and I'm going there, I'm going to get a packet from there coming here. There's a reflection there. The ports are going to match. If I'm talking to the web over there from some random location here, I'm going to get a packet from the web over there back to my location here. There's the initial sequence number. There is the point in the sequence in TCP, it's a 32-bit range. I go ahead and I send a SYN out. I will get a SYNACK or a RESETACK back with the SYN value plus one. Now here we have a possible range where I don't need to keep track of who I'm sending packets to, but when I get the packet back, it's going to have a little bit of what I said. It's going to have the IPs, but I can't really mess with the IPs because, you know, I'd like to actually get the response back. I could mess with the destination port, but I'd like to actually say, no, I'm scanning the web port. But nothing says I need to choose a specific source port, and nothing says I need to choose a specific initial sequence number. So I actually have a grand total of 48 bits that I can send out that the other guy's going to send back to me. So scanran 1.0 goes ahead and takes a hash of a bunch of different values, takes a hash of the IPs, takes a hash of the ports, and it takes the first 32 bits of the SHA-1 combined with the seed value for the HMAC and uses SHA-1 HMAC and takes the first 32 bits, and that's the sequence number. Now, what's nice about this is now somebody can choose one of two things. They receive a scan from me. They can acknowledge, yeah, I'm that IP address, and here's who I address, and here's who I am, and this service is up, or this service is down, but they can't spoof being any other IP. They can't even spoof the fact that I sent them a scan if I never sent anything to them in the first place, because they do not have the necessary material. It's very much like what's being done with HTTP cookies, using stateless servers, but having all the state held within the cookie. Only it's a really tiny 32-bit long cookie. Now, scanran 2.0, which is actually being shown off here, we have a new thing, although it's not entirely done, it's not entirely ready. I like to be able to manage time very well. I want to know the latency of a connection. Right now in scanran 1x, I'm actually saying, well, when did I started sending packets now. So whenever I receive them back, you know, I take the difference, and oh yeah, that took half a second. That works really nicely for static scans from one place. It doesn't scale nearly as nicely to when you have 100 different senders and one receiver, and the receiver is just persistent. The receiver is always up. So what I'm looking at is I'm actually looking at setting the source port that you send your packet from. Well, that's going to be a timestamp, because it's going to be anything, so I'll just put the time in there. That actually is going to work pretty well. So basic features of ScanRAN. Actually, question. Is this thing over here readable? Hang on. Like this text down here. Oh, by the way, have you guys seen Quake? The Quake terminal for KDE. It's kind of nice. Here, I'll set this larger then. Settings, font, large. Here, that works. All right. So, hang on. Technical difficulties. Please stand by. This happens to be why I really like wireless mics. All right, so ScanRAN supports all the syntax that you'd ever expect. ScanMySite. It also supports doing bandwidth limitation. We're not on, like, an OC192, so I'm just setting it to only send packets out at, say, 10 kilobit a second. We can do 80, 443, 465. We can do a range, you know, 475 if we cared. And there we have ports that are up in there. If you add a dash E, you'll actually see not only those that are up, but those that are down. Now, you might notice there's these numbers in brackets. 15, 16, and then there's all these 25s for a very strange reason that I'll tell you in a second. Sweetness. Alright, so check this out. Estimated hop count. If you presume for a moment that the time to live value on a given packet started from some number, say 100, say 128, or say what the real truth is, some number modulo 32. Every single operating system except one Sun OS, which uses a TTL of 240, uses some starting TTL value that is offset from 32. 32, 64, 128, The only suit of the lot will start also at 255, which gives you a one-off error. So I estimate a hop count. I say, I estimate this guy is however many hops away as their number deviates from a mod 32. And it actually is accurate, usually within 1 to 2 hops. You'll see a little bit more details on how that varies later when I do a trace route data. So, you notice 480, 15 hops away, and that's approximately correct. 443 is 15. But then you see all these 25s. You know, I saw that and I'm like, God, my system's broken. My God, I'm going to do this demo and everything's wrong. And then I noticed, hey, wait a second, 465 at 16, 5 at 16. Well, what's different about port 465 and port, say, port 467? Well, you know, it comes down to, for a couple years, I thought IP options didn't work on the internet. Now, why would I think that? Well, I happen to live behind two PIX firewalls. And PIX has a very amusing little bug. When PIX sends you a reset ACK, they happen to completely mishandle the TTL value that they give you. They munge it bizarrely. So, yeah, that reset ACK that has all those reset ACKs that are port 25, that are 25 hops away, yeah, that's from the PIX. That one that's 16, oh no, that's actually from the Linux box. So you can remotely query my PIX firewall table. Thank you. there is actually one other interesting thing, as long as I'm talking about interesting network bugs, that ScanRAN very accidentally found. We'll look at hop 2. Okay, so this is General Electric. Cisco has the same bug. Now you'll notice I'm getting an estimated hop count of one extra hop for the SSL port versus the web port. Now, can anyone guess why there would be one extra hop for SSL? Go ahead. A cache, an SSL accelerator? Exactly. There's another server that's listening on that port. There's something doing a forwarding. And when it does the forwarding, because it still wants to prevent the routing loop, it goes ahead and decrements the TTL by one, which is, of course, picked up by the estimated hop count, precisely. So ScanRAN turns out to be unexpectedly useful for finding all these really nice and obscure things. There's one other obscure mode to it, which is called, I originally called it Disco, just because I was, I don't know, on crack or something. but it's really distance calculation using reset. If you send a packet to a host, completely, like you just send an ACK, and it has no reason, it's attached to no stack, like, the kernel sees it, it's just like, I have no idea what this packet is, reset, go away. Well, it wants to do that really fast. It wants to do it as fast as possible. So really what it does, and I know because I have code that does this myself, it takes the incoming packet, and it twiddles the few bits that it thinks are wrong, and it sends the packet right back out on its way. Well, that means it's not resetting the TTL value. So if you set some really screwy TTL value, you say you set your TTL to 2. Well, actually, let's look at what's actually happening here. Work with me. So, one nice thing, ScanRAN has a really nice ultra-verbose mode. I got tired of using TCP dump, so I just sort of built in a little packet breaker for me. yes, I need to use these things. All right, so you send out this packet. You'll notice it has the TTL value of on the sent of 216. And we see we get a reply back of a TTL of 189. Now, it turns out TTLs between 100 and 200 are incredibly rare on the internet. Because, you know what, we don't have that because we have startup TTLs of 32, 64, occasionally 128. I think it's usually Windows machines that have that. And then past that, it's almost always 255. So you would need, at the 255 case, to get down into the 180s, 170s, 160s legitimately, you need like 70 hops. There aren't many 70 hop routes out there on the internet, thank God. So if I set my initial value to about 216, you know, packet goes all the way out, decrementing TTLs all the way, and then it comes back. So basically, I have a difference of, 216 minus 189, you divide that by 2, and that is the distance. Now, you think, why do we need that? We already have all these other methods. Well, it turns out there's all these systems that go ahead and actually fully legitimate connections, oh, they'll break the TTL for you. Some firewall will go ahead and say that everything's seven hops away. Use Disco, and wow, everything is actually the true distance. I found this out completely accidentally. I was wondering what the bug was in my system that everything was seven hops away. Then I tried Disco, and it's like, oh, okay, DBC's 20 hops away, and the guy next door's five hops away. It works for me. Uses for some of this stuff. I'll change, go out of order for a sec. How many people here are working on some kind of system that involves a huge peer-to-peer system and lots of hosts with sockets open to each other? Alright guys, guess what? You can send packets to each other and figure out how many hops away each of your nodes are and build your graphs that way. Right now pretty much all you have is latency to play with. Now you get hop counts. And now you get even more than that. And this is Brandon Wiley who pointed this out. So you've got, let's say, two hosts, and they've got this huge latency between them. So you can do a binary search. You find out the distance, say it's 8 hops. Now you do a trace at 4 hops, and you see what the latency is to 4 hops. If it's high, you know your screw-up's early. If it's low, you go out to 6. If it's high, you know it's at 6 or 5. So you can basically quickly determine where the breaks are, where the borders are, and actually make your networks more efficient. And now, when you have complete control over the clients, it gets even better, because you can actually explicitly set, I want my outgoing TTL on this packet to be X or Y or Z. Turns out, at least on Windows, and I believe on Unix as well, there's a socket option. There's a socket IPTTL. And why is it there? It's there for the multicast guys, because multicast TTL settings are really important. Now, I'm pretty sure that this will actually work on unicast sockets, but to be honest, I haven't fully checked it. All right, so this is moderately useful, fun stuff to have available. I didn't fully mention that, but yeah, we do traceroute too. 10K, maximum 20 hops. Someone name a site. This is the first presentation in the history of me giving talks I've actually had net up networks kick the ass. Airwave.com, huh? Just gonna blow up my machine again. So yeah, we got a full trace in about 436 milliseconds. Now as you see, the bracketed values, the value on the left is always correct. The value on the left is using I think it's the Van Jacobsen method of increasing the source port value one by one. So that value is always correct. The values on the right are assumed. Those are the ones that are guessed from the TTL value. You'll see there's a bit of a difference, but you'll notice they're reasonably accurate, maybe about 80% of the time. So, I mean, they're a good metric, and considering you get them for free, like, anyone here play Counter-Strike? Counter-Strike could theoretically, when it says ping, it could just go ahead and look at the TTLs and say, this is how far away each of these game servers are. So it's data that's there that just people aren't looking at. Part of it is because, you know, people don't want to be messing with raw sockets, but I'm dealing with that, you'll see. So, that's kind of cool. Temporal fingerprint. Check this out, guys. TCP. TCP fixes problems. That's what it does. Let's say a packet drops. Well, TCP says I need to do a retry. If my first retry set fails, I'll wait a little while and try again. How many retries? How long will I wait? You see, the spec says you have to try. It doesn't say exactly when and exactly how often. Different operating systems do this at different rates. That sounds like a fingerprinting technique to me, which turns out works beautifully. Now, this is out of, this is from the Ring Code. I keep forgetting this guy's name. He's brilliant. He's in France. He wrote this code called Ring, made it a patch to Nmap. Unfortunately, it is a royal pain to actually get to work. So, I went ahead and figured out how to hack a scanrand into doing it. Now, what I should be doing... Now, here's the thing. I send a SYN out. The SYN act comes back to me. My kernel never sends a SYN. It's getting this SYN act. It's not attached to any session. It sends a reset. This is great. Because now I don't need to write it. Now I don't need to any reset handling code. My kernel will do it for me. except now, and what happens if I don't do a reset? Well, they'll just keep sending me packets. Well, guess what? Now I'm doing temporal fingerprinting, so I want all those packets. Now, what the ring code does is it tries to do some custom operating system firewalling, and it just gets really messy. I'm like, yeah, I'll just take an IP my kernel's not using. How about that? So, but, you know, I didn't want to actually even write the code to manage ARC. So what I did was I told the kernel to proxy ARC. Here, let's go ahead and look at what I did on my home machine. Okay. So if you look at the top, you'll see me going ahead, and this is a 10.0.1.0 network on a class C. First thing I go ahead and do is I tell the kernel, hey, anytime you see someone looking for 10.0.1.190, here's the address, and publish it out. That works. Now I go ahead, you know, I look at my ARP cache, hey, what can I say? And I run Scanran, and I tell Scanran, send your packets from 10.0.1.190. Scanran goes ahead, complies. And now let's look at what I see. First of all, you'll notice I went ahead and manually resorted this just for your viewing pleasure. First of all, we have a +3 and a +6. Looks like a Windows machine. We have a +3, and what I'm talking about plus is I'm talking about the offset in between when I get the first packet, the second packet, the third packet, and so on. A +3, +6, +12. I actually don't know what that machine is, which is really bad because it's on my network. Most of these are +3s, +6s. But look at this. There's a +4, a +6, a +6, +12, and now a +24. Look at that. 46 seconds after I sent it a SYN, it's still harassing me with SYNX. That's got to be Linux. See, when Microsoft just gives up, it's like, yeah, I tried. I don't know. So, yeah, nothing weird about your package. Entirely time-based, and now you're picking apart which stack someone's using on you. Really nice, and what's really good is it, no one can tell. Huh? Yeah, it's almost impossible to prevent. It is possible, but you have to have a scrubber in front of your entire network, and the scrubber has to basically pull apart all streams and uniform, this is how I will always behave. And therefore, you know there's a scrubber, but that's all you know. It's not impossible, it's just a royal pain. And I mentioned this not theoretical, what's it called, IP filter should handle things. Not the new IP, PF. PF has new scrubbing code. Huh? Yeah. Okay, what else am I supposed to talk to you guys about? I'll skip that. So, a lot of this has been around for a while, even if it hasn't been publicly known. And, you know, one of the things I've been saying is if I go around giving the same talk year after year after year, someone needs to, you know, take me up back and shoot me because I'm done. So, yeah, we have new code. What's in the new code? Well, first of all, Scanran usually depends on forking. Not all platforms have fork. I'd like to see Scanran as this little tiny device that has a little port and says, oh, here's what's on your network. So I built a non-blocking implementation using the new code inside of libpcap. Massively less elegant. Inside of the send packet loop, you have to go ahead and see if there's any new packets to pick up. But I wanted to see if it was possible for the non-forking platform that is, by the way, Windows. Yes, sometime this week there will be a Win32 port of all this. Why is this good? Among other things, because I'm obsessed with tunneling and I actually want to be bouncing scans off of arbitrary Windows machines. This will happen. This will be good. But at the end of the day, the best stuff that I will ever do, I actually won't write. It will be other people. Yes, guys, you are the first to see libpaketo. Libpaketo is basically written in this style. This was a pain in the ass for me to learn. You shouldn't have to relearn it. So, this is how you build Keto Kairetsu stuff into your network, into your tools. Demo 1. Hi, yeah, that'll basically run a scan. It is one line of code. It takes in a target. The target is formatted just as you're used to, I mean, just as you've been seeing. And you know what? I should just show it. I'm really happy I got this working. Happy I could be on this. Come on, don't embarrass me. Yes! See? Now, I suspect, let's see, what else we've got here. Okay, now you'll notice, yes, you've got an option here. I mean, you've got a target here, but there's all these options you might want to be able to mess with. So, I know it's getting us past a single line of code. Now we have to have 4 lines of code. You create a configuration structure, use this nice thing to do the malloc for you, you set the values you want, you put it into pkscanrand, it works. Now we go ahead and we run the same scan to CNN. By the way, can everybody read the code itself, or do you want me to make it bigger? All right. How's that? All right. So, as you can see, this API is meant to be as trivial as possible. As we get later on, it's going to get a little less trivial, and don't worry, that's a bug, not a feature. So, now we go ahead and we have verbosity set up. We also have bandwidth limitations set up. If we go ahead, now of course, you know, like I said, all this stuff works, so where are we on? 192.168.11.1-254. Hello, all USSA servers. And this is actually a slow scan. This is at 10 kilobit a second. But as you see, we have verbosity on. There was actually delays in between packets. If we happen to turn this line off, basically the wireless network will just not like me and most packets will get dropped. This is what happens when you plug wireless. All right. Yeah, that's quite true. I have no idea why I set PCAP handler main. All right. As you see, that was a hell of a lot faster, and we got very few replies. But we did get some. And actually, what's happening is resets themselves are bouncing or getting dropped, and that's why we're getting redundant traffic. Okay, so you might actually be wanting to do more than... Let's see, what do I have next to you? Oh, you might want to do more than just do this standard display. Ideally, you will write me a nice Qt interface, and life will be happy. Alright, so let's look at actually replacing my print function with your own. Now one thing that's important is, so here we are. We declare a function, PCAP handler, jump for joy. Whatever the hell you want to do. You basically put it in as the 4th option, the 5th one, whatever you happen to need as configuration, and you win. Oh wow, I'm totally not going to get to show like half my thing. So, basically, we get packets. And I'll show you the code later. There's a bunch of stuff I want to show, so I'm going to skip through some of these things. But basically, Jump for Joy only gets valid packets. There is a separate verifier that verifies that, yes, this is indeed a valid packet of the type that you requested. And you eventually get close to a full rewrite of Paketo of Scanrand, at least, in, I don't know, a couple lines of code. One function that I do want to point out is pksniff. Pksniff is basically no setup, no initialization. Here, look at this interface. Every time you see a packet on this interface that matches a certain pattern from libpcap, run this function. You want to say ICMP and host 1234? Go ahead. I will understand it just fine. I'm really running short on time. I'm going to show you all these really cool things. Let me show you some videos. You guys have been having fun and whatnot. Here, so one of the other things in Paketo is this thing called Ventropy. By the way, did anyone actually get UDPcast and have mPlayer running and stuff? Okay, forget it then. I'll show it to you in private then. Ventropy basically uses Michael Zelewski's method of viewing random numbers. So you take 4 numbers out of a string. Any string. It can be a JPEG, it can be a photo, it can be whatever. Zelewski was looking at TCP/IP sequence numbers, or TCP sequence numbers. So you take the 4 numbers, you look at the differences between them, so you're left with 3 numbers. First is X, second is Y, third is Z, plot a point. Now, you wouldn't think you'd get really interesting results out of this, but this is what happens if you trust the random variable in Bash. See those lines and striations and whatnot? Yeah, that's redundancy. This is really nice for being able to tell people, we actually need to have a real random number generator. But see what happens when we put really non-random stuff. Here's the BSD kernel. And this is actually done using this medical toolkit called OpenQVIS that this absolutely psychotic German hacker put together. It was his, he was a grad student, and this was his project. GPL, fully open source, written in Qt, works on Windows, works on Linux somehow, works on OS X. It's pretty much the best advertisement for Qt I've ever seen in my life. It's easily an order of magnitude faster than any other technique. It uses NVIDIA hardware acceleration. And actually the Zaluskian dataset, just for correctness, this is Eric's DNS sequence numbers. As you can see, they're very, very clustered in certain areas. So this is pretty much the stuff I've been playing with. The idea is find new ways to use networks, find new ways to see what's available, find new toys to play with because everyone likes that toy. That being said, I am going to open it up to the floor. What would you guys like to know? Oh, no more wireless? Oh, sweet.
Question?
Life is good.
I was trying to package Paketo in a distribution, and it looks like it doesn't like to build against already installed shared libraries. It looks like it likes to link static against its own libnet and pcap.
Well, the problem is this. Particularly now, libpcap, we really do need the absolute latest libpcap because we need the non-blocking support. And for libnet, there's some bugs in Mike Schiffman's libnet implementation. Most notably, he doesn't set his structures to packed, so this causes all sorts of problems on anything that's not precisely x86. By the way, if you ever have alignment problems when you have your structure and you want to just overlay it on some data, attribute packed is your friend. It just fixes it. The compiler deals with all the misery. Absolutely nice. So basically, you have your structure that defines what a TCP header is. You just overlay it on top of TCP, and it just works. And it never screws up, no matter how screwed up the architecture is. It's very nice. And, we'll fix that later, by the way. Other questions?
Nmap has a very good fingerprinting database. Is there any database for the reset timeouts that you said?
Okay, so the Ring guys actually created somewhat of a database. Now, I'm just using the behavior after, from the SYN to the SYNAC. It turns out there's all, the TP is a state machine, and each of the different states has slightly different timing. He started to build the actual mapping of what operating systems have which timings, and it's actually in his branch of Nmap, but honestly, his mapper doesn't do very well. Not yet, at least. Hopefully we'll make it better.
Questions?
If not questions, I also take requests.
Any plans for IPv6 support?
Funny you mentioned that. Yeah, you saw that whole contest thing about, that the Japanese are running? Yeah, my IPv6 interest just went from here to, there. On the flip side, IPv6 is actually designed a decent amount better, so a lot of the things that I'd need to otherwise hack around, I no longer need to. But certainly there's possibilities. You have enough bits around to do tons of Stego in the actual interface. I mean, the actual address space. There's all sorts of possibilities. One guy's actually done some of the research looking at what happens when you set IPv4 localhost but IPv6 address, and you end up getting around all sorts of stuff. So there's definitely holes to be found. Just it hasn't been what I've actually gone into yet. Give me a month or two. Give me till, July or something. Other questions? Okay, OpenQVIS. In terms of software that you absolutely need to go get your hands on, let me go ahead and spell this. OpenQVIS. This software is amazing. it is absolutely trivial to interface with. Declare a matrix, 256 by 256 by 256. Fill it with data. Write it to disk. Use a stupid little header. I've mentioned this because all the other volumetric systems have these really, really strange raw formats. They're not open qubits. You just take your data and you throw it in and it just works. It's quite nice.
But people seem really intimidated to ask questions.
You don't need to be intimidated.
But you know, I think you can keep going through things that you were running short on time for now.
Oh, sweet. Excellent. Paketo Kairetsu? Oh, the contest. Yeah, there. Someone else knew. They can give them the mic. Was on, I don't know if it was on Slashdot today. It was on Slashdot a few weeks ago. They're giving away, like, $10,000 to whoever makes the best IPv6 application.
I typed IPv6 Contest Japan into Google, and I got lucky.
All right, so interesting stuff. One of the other things inside of Paketo is called Linkcat. And Linkcat is basically meant to give you an interface to the wire without having to do anything. Can you write to a file? Can you write to standard out? Can you read from standard in? All right, then you can go ahead and you can mess with the wire. making pain in the ass packet handling easier since 2002. I think that's my slogan for it. So yeah, standard I.O. is a lot easier to deal with than raw packets, or if you're on Windows, a socket is a hell of a lot easier to deal with than standard I.O. So the new Linkcat's actually going to support, you actually TCP into Linkcat, and then you're basically looking at the raw wire. Now what do I mean about the raw wire? Well, actually, I should do it up here. See that? That's what's on the ether right now. Now there's two modes. There's text dump, which might be easier to read for some of you. Or there's Yep. You know, it's actually moderately entertaining to just leave this on. So what the hell is that anyway, by the way? Wait, I thought someone was me. Steve Minot's website. Raise your hand if you're browsing. There we are. There's the winner. So, you know, this doesn't just support reading. This actually supports writing. So the same bytes that you saw. Look at this. Oh, shoot. Here, we'll do this. And you can actually do filters, so we can just say, give me only ICMP traffic. Okay, so check this out. This is actually a demo I was going to do. So we're sending pings off to news.com. You'll note there's a bunch of ICMP traffic here, right? Now I'm supposed to try to guess which one was actually... Actually, here's how we'll do it. So, we're going to set our listen filter. Remember, one of the things I bragged about doing was ICMP echo over cut and paste. Apparently now I have time to play with that. So, we're going to say, I want to capture all the ICMP traffic to news.com. I'm sure the syntax could be easier. I'm not sure how. So, okay, so we have that sniffer open now, and it's going to work everything in hex. So, what you actually see up here is at least one of the... This is definitely a packet here. Now, if I do nothing... Now, what you see happen... So, the first one you see up there, I actually pasted in. The second one is it sniffing what I pasted in on the wire. The third one's the reply, we just did ping over cut and paste. There you go. Now, that's a parlor trick, but it's a fun one. But yes, it will replay just fine. Check this out. I can go ahead, and how many people here know what Ethernet trailers are? Turns out, for those who don't know, IP has a length field. It says this IP packet is this length. This is this length. Ethernet doesn't actually have a true length field. Some implementations theoretically do, but at the end of the day, it's the driver that says, I sucked 1,500 bytes off the network. Now, if IP was only responsible for 200 or 300 of them, well, the IP stack says, ain't mine, and just ignores it. But that data was still on the network, and it was still sniffable, and it was still there. Possibly we could use this? Oh, yeah. We can stick signatures in there. We can sign our ARP, because ARP has its length, and we can just shove our signature somewhere else. Now, I've got a really early implementation, and it's embarrassingly crypto-wise, but I just did it just for, you know, shits and giggles. I went ahead and I threw an HMAC of the packet into the Ethernet trailer. And it's really easy to go ahead and use. You just go ahead and you say, you have one key for verification, you have to have the same key for verification and for, setting. So say, code cons are key. Alright, so let's see if this works. Now, you'll notice, it actually now doesn't matter what other traffic's on the network, because guess what, none of it has its nice little signature. If I paste this, it actually broke somehow. That sucks. Oh, yeah, that's right, I have a fix for that. Yeah, I actually went ahead and tested all my stuff and found broken things, but I didn't actually change that for the one that was running. What's the rule? No demo ever works. All right, so I actually should be up here for this because this takes kind of a little bit of seeing. So the top one, you'll see it stops at the 37, and that's because most ping implementations will go ahead and have as their content a increasing stream of numbers. Now you'll see the 36, 37, but now you have 33, E1, F3, 89, 39, and so on. You have extra material that's made it on the network. Now what that is that's actually the SHA-1 hash. And that's what we're seeing. What we're seeing is, the top material was sent, and then that was what was actually put on the wire. The fact that we got a reply, which I'm not entirely sure why we saw, but the fact that we got a reply means that that data actually got out. Even though it had all this crap at the end, the signature actually got out. Now, why is this nice and useful, and why am I actually bringing this up? Because it means now you can theoretically do incremental deployments of your cryptographic systems. Instead of shifting everything over to some new standard for, encapsulating your packets that breaks everyone else, no. Just shove something on the end. People who care, they can go ahead and start authenticating your traffic. People who don't care, well, they're not off, and nobody's authenticating it now. So the few people who care can go ahead and start, upgrading their systems to look for these signatures. Eventually, you reach a critical mass and you shut off support for those who aren't. Now, this is what's awesome. I totally thought routers did. And the exact quote that came to me was, Cisco did not get rich paying attention to the length of packets. And, of course, it makes a lot of sense, because, they would have to look at one byte in the middle of IP to figure out, hey, wait a second, this stuff shouldn't be here in the first place. And it'd be for a rare problem that no one's ever been exploiting. So, yeah, this stuff doesn't always route, and it particularly through firewalls, forget about it, but inside a corporation, oh, yeah, it'll bounce around. Much to my absolute shock, but it will. So, yeah, that's really, really interesting. Now, I've been given the spinning finger. So, unless there's any last questions, which I think we have time for one more question.
It's actually a comment. I'm glad you rediscovered these trailers, because Tsutomu Shimomura wrote something that patched itself into the SunOS kernel and found where the Ethernet drivers were and took security information out of the system and put it into trailers of IP packets.
Nice. Excellent. So I hope you've all enjoyed my little discussion on what toys I've been playing with. Thank you to Bram for bringing me out here.